Welcome to the Mid-Stage Startup Momentum Podcast. Each week, we interview up-and-coming founders of some of the fastest-growing mid-stage startups across the world. Your host is Roland Siebeling, who will share some of his own experience helping startups scale from 10 to 1,000 people in a few years. Here is Roland.
Hello and welcome to the Mid-Stage Startup Momentum Podcast. My name is Roland Siebeling and I'm a coach and ally to many of the fastest growing startups around the world. And today I have somebody in the studio with me who is a guru I look up to in that same field. It's Steve Hoffman, otherwise known as Captain Hoff, the author of three amazing books about how to really build a startup and optimize it for exponential growth. Tons of experience, and we're just going to riff about everything it takes to make a startup successful. So this is a great episode, I promise you. Hello, Steve.
Well, it's fantastic to be here.
That's amazing. So Steve, we'll talk about a lot of startups, but just in a nutshell, if you were to introduce in your elevator pitch, who are you, where you came from? Who is this guy, actually, this Captain Hoff?
Who am I?
Yes.
So I've been around a long time. So I've done a lot. I did three venture-funded startups in Silicon Valley. I was the founder, CEO, two bootstrap startups. And then I launched Founder Space, which is now, it wasn't when I began, but it's now a global startup accelerator. We work in over 22 countries. We have partners all over the world. I'm constantly traveling. Our headquarters are in Silicon Valley. We've been there a long time. And I'm also an author. So as you mentioned, you know, I have a couple books that startups love. One is Surviving a Startup, which is published by HarperCollins. And it's all about, you know, everything entrepreneurs need to survive, which is the hardest thing for most startups before they begin to really grow like crazy. And then my other book, Make Elephants Fly. And the elephant is your big idea, that dream you have of getting it off the ground. How do you do that?
Excellent. Okay, very good. So Steve, you mentioned that you founded this accelerator, right? So give us an idea about some of the volume of startups that you've worked with over the years. And are there some particular success stories that you're proud of?
Oh, there's so many. So many great startups in that have been through Founder Space. One that's preparing to go public now is Grub Market. Now, Grub Market, when they were in Founder Space very early on, their whole idea was, how do you get fresh produce from the farm to the table? So, and this was years ago. But like so many startups, they have an interesting story. You know, that business was good. But it quickly, it's crowded, right? There's a lot of players who moved in. Amazon, big players who are all getting food to your house, you know, a gazillion people delivering food to your house. They, though, their niche was from the farm, directly from the farm. But what they found was that along the way, they had to build out a lot of the infrastructure for this distribution channel, for getting food from a farm directly to consumers. And they became an infrastructure company around that. And that is what took them to the next level because there's nobody in that space. So my lesson to entrepreneurs is, you know, you start with what sounds like a great idea, but it's really a journey. And you're always discovering where that next opportunity is.
Is that also part of what you describe in that book, Make Elephants Fly? Let you start from a vision, but the way you implement it is going to change radically over the years?
So Make Elephants Fly is about that process of innovation and about the process of continual innovation, continually. And this is what a lot of startup founders, they think, you know, they latch onto an idea and you get locked into that idea. Like you're like, this is our business. This is what we do. And it's really hard at that point to keep innovating because you just want to execute on what you've already decided. You know, people like certainty, but the world isn't certain. The world is always changing under your feet. It's literally moving under your feet. And you've got to a lot of times change complete direction. Even though you have something that's working, there may be something out there that works much, much better. That gets your company to grow much, much faster. I will give you an example. So I'm working with a startup now. I won't name them, but I've been consulting with them for 4 years. And they do home delivery, right, of food. And that business is so crowded now. Like it's so crowded. You know, they had a unique premise at the beginning, but that premise didn't pan out. that would really separate them from all the big delivery companies that are delivering. And I have been pushing them to change. Now they have a problem. So they got in all these investors, you know, mm-hmm. that came on board, a lot of angels putting in their personal money into mm-hmm. this company mm-hmm. based on the vision they sold them originally, mm-hmm. which was a great vision, but it became so crowded and so hard to mm-hmm. execute on. Now, how do they go back to those investors and tell them, you know, we've been spending your money for right. quite some time now, and we have to change direction. We have to kind of throw out everything we did. And that's the hard thing is, you know, I keep pushing them, you know, they're like, no, we can reach profitability on our current model. We're so close to getting profitable. Mm-hmm, but I'm mm-hmm. like, but you're not growing fast.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, you're just going to be a struggling, barely profitable company. You've got to throw out all these years of work and focus on another bigger opportunity. Otherwise, you're actually wasting your time. But it's hard for them. It's just painful because they have these investors, they have these metrics, they have their whole mindset focused on this one direction. Mm-hmm. And I can see there's no big future there, but what do you do?
Sure.
So you've been selling them on this vision. It's hard to go back without looking like a hypocrite and say, you know, I've been selling you on the vision that isn't working. You know, now give me more money to change direction. You know,
absolutely.
Most of them, like, what if somebody came back to you, you know, we've been selling you on this vision for years, but it isn't going to scale fast. It isn't going to grow the way we thought it would. Now we need more money. You know,
the really... other argument you could have there is that, well, they're investors. So in the end, they're only going to care about the return here. And if you're a savvy business person, entrepreneur, you could just say like, well, you know, this was our vision originally, but this vision seems a lot more attractive for what we can do right now.
That's,
it's just a hard sell for more funding,
that's
right?
That's what they're doing right now.
Yeah.
They are shifting gradually to this new vision while not totally throwing out what they have.
Yeah.
But I am like, well, you know, do you just toss it? Like, you know, or do you gradually shift? You know, it's a really tough decision, right?
Yes.
You know, they have built up this, you know, something that mm-hmm. their new vision plays on their old vision, but yep. It's still very different at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
So how quickly do you shift and mm-hmm. where do you put your resources? My gut feeling, you know, as an advisor is you have to shift fast. You have mm-hmm. to just cut your losses and kind of redirect, but that creates a radical change.
I want to go back a little bit to the kind of founders you work with, because if you run an accelerator, I think selection of who do you let in is part of the process, right? So what do you look for in a founder in like, what is the, I mean, nobody can predict the future, but what is the kind of profile where you have a really good feeling like if that founder has these 2-3 qualities, that's where I see an amazing founder in the making.
I would say selecting the founders is like 90% of your job. Like,
right?
If you pick the right founders, literally there will probably be good results. And if you pick the wrong people, there will certainly not mm-hmm. be good results.
Yeah.
So, you know, in an accelerator, like you help them along the way, you just make the results better as an
yeah.
accelerator,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but you don't fundamentally change the equation. I look for a couple things in entrepreneurs that are really telling.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, I sit down with entrepreneurs before we make the final selection who I work with. And I talk to them. Like
mm-hmm.
I talk to, I want to see in their life, I don't care what university they went to, mm-hmm. you know, those standardized tests that they use to get into are all bogus. Like the whole thing is bogus. I don't care what university they went to. I don't care what, you know, even if they ended up working for Google or, you know,
right.
Facebook or whatever mm-hmm. company, I care, what did you do when
mm-hmm.
you were at the university? What did you do when you were at Google or Facebook? What did you do when you were in high school? Can you show me that you have done anything exceptional, anything that would make me go, wow, like
mm-hmm.
you've really accomplished something. I don't
standing
care if it was
out
a
from
club
the crowd.
A club you formed in high school or a hobby you had that you made take off. You know, what did you do? Or you supported your parents in some way when they went through a really difficult crisis. You know, I want to see qualities in the story you tell me about yourself that demonstrate what makes great entrepreneurship. Great entrepreneurship, number one, thinking differently than other people, you know, looking at situations and asking questions, being the type of person who questions, what, you know, why do people do it this way? Why is the world this way? What if we tried this? And then the second thing is not just asking the questions, executing on the questions.
Right.
Can you get other people to follow you and make this change that a lot of times seems crazy, you know, unreasonable, you know, that most people would say, well, that's impossible, but you go ahead and actually make that happen. It can be inside a corporation. It can be, you know, your own thing, your own private. I don't care what it is. I want to see those qualities. And then I want to see that you faced tough obstacles. Like you, when those obstacles came up, you kept your team together. Whoever you got to help you execute on this, you kept them together and you overcame those obstacles.
Steve, looking a little bit at the transition from that early stage where people are just trying to figure out something that gets traction to more like the mid stage, right? So I think the typical tipping point is what we call product market fit. How many founders have already asked you to define that for them?
So yeah, product market fit is actually quite simple.
Yes.
and it's, you know, because a lot of companies don't really have it, or they have it halfway. The hard part is when you get, you know, like the company I described earlier, they have a product market fit. Their customers love them. You know, I described them earlier, right? They love, they do incredible job, but it's super competitive, right? So you have a product market fit, but the profit margins aren't there to scale a company fast because there's too much competition. There's different types of product market fit. The simplest version is you go out to customers early and you engage with them and you either show them an early version of your product, you describe it to them any way possible, you get something in front of them that they can respond to. And they don't say, oh, that's nice. That's really nice. Come back to me when it's ready. Or, you know, yeah, that's nice. I'd probably be interested in this. If they say that's nice, it's the kiss of death. None of us ever need nice products or services. We never need them. You know, saying that's nice, it's a nice to have. And what we call a nice to have is something you don't need. Most people out there, whoever your customers are, they have maybe five needs that they're going to act on.
Oh, yes, of course.
Right. So it doesn't matter what it is. It has to be in whoever your customer, it has to be one of the top five things that they want right now, not in the future, right now, today. And you need to figure that out. You need to map that out. If it's in one of their top five things, it has to be something that they're not getting. A real product market fit is something they're not getting from the competitors in the way that you're giving it to them.
You mentioned also that the startup you were working with right now is proud of almost having reached profitability, but they're not growing fast enough. How do you optimize when the startups you work with, like their focus on growth versus profitability? And how has that changed in the last year, 18 months of this funding crisis?
Normally, myself being a Silicon Valley guy, I'll tell people, you know, go for growth, go for growth, 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 growth. You know, if you focus on profitability, somebody's going to overtake you and they're going to crush you because they are going to get the capital because they're growing faster. Right now, that isn't necessarily the case in a lot of spaces. You know, it comes down to like my book, Surviving a Startup. It comes down to survival. Like startups have to do what it takes to survive. If growth, if it's a growth market, a bull market, investors are shoveling money in, you've got to grow faster than everybody else. That's how you survive. Otherwise, you get wiped out, you know, because everybody goes for the market leader. If it's a contracting market, you know, like right now, where investors are hoarding their money, everybody's scared, then you need to survive a different way. And survival usually means going back and making sure every piece of your business is excellent. Like all those little pieces when you're in growth mode that you overlook because you're really focused on how do I expand faster? How do I get more customers? That's what you're focused on. In survival mode, which we are in right now, you literally have to look at all the different elements of your business and like, is our customer support good enough? Is how we distribute products efficient? Are we getting to them in the best way? Is our procurement done right? All these different elements, you know, can we trim our marketing budget and really focus on just the ones that convert and have sticking power, you know, lifetime value for us? these changes and looking at these changes, and I know, Roland, that's a lot of what you do, is like that's what ensures the company will be there to get the next funding round as things improve. You know, it's not always the big idea that drives growth.
Right.
It's a lot of times a lot of the little ideas. And what founders have to do is they have to think, you know, we have this big vision. We want to conquer the world. But we also, you know, historically, the companies that have done well pay attention to the details. Mm-hmm. They pay attention. The founders are obsessed with the details of their business. And they are looking at every little detail to optimize it. So you have to do both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned focus there briefly in marketing channels. Is that something you see as a broader lever in these bad times where people are just all over the place doing too many things at a time, where you can focus a lot more on what really works for them?
Well, I have the same problem myself. Human beings, like we live in a world,
yes.
You know, a world of distractions, you know, things popping up, messages, you know, we're always being distracted by 101 shiny objects. And there's always some new potential out there, some new technology that's emerging, you know, you know, that you could jump onto. Like this startup that, you know, I was helping that was struggling, they were like, oh, should I use AI now? And I'm like, well, there's a gazillion players in AI. You have no expertise in this. You're not going to win in that space. That's, you know, you have
that's
to,
right.
That, like, you know, you don't want to be chasing, you know, whatever the last big hype thing was. You want to figure out what's essential to your business. And really, like you said, if anything, startup founders are always trying too many things. They need to try. What you need to do is you need to really focus on what's the core of our business. Define that. What's the core value we're creating for the customer? Is this core value really delivering? Do the customers really appreciate what we're doing for them? If they don't, then you need to look at what do the customers really want?
Right.
How can we change to meet the needs that they actually value the most? And that means refocusing. So it doesn't mean not exploring. Focus doesn't mean not exploring other ideas. It means always questioning whether what you're doing is right, always looking at other possibilities, but not acting on them unless you can confirm that you really need to make that change. And then you need to totally switch to figuring out that other problem.
Yeah, I also like the framework of the growth hacking guys, where they say, you know, there's one base tactic to deliver our leads, let's say, and then there's always one experiment at a time to try and beat the base tactic, but no more than one. And basically, it's typically only 10% of the budget, maybe 20, but definitely not 50-50, right?
That's what you have to do. You have to be like, this is our base. This is what's delivering. And can we do better? Is there a better way to do this? And you don't want to 10 experiments at a time, because you're not going to put in enough thought, enough time, enough resources to make any of those other 10 experiments meaningful, right?
Exactly.
You can really only do one other thing.
So talking again about your book, Surviving a Startup, of course, we talked about survival in bad times already, but there are also other aspects such as surviving an investor, surviving a co-founder. Let's talk about those human aspects a little bit.
Yeah.
Tell us, share your experience, Steve.
Surviving investors, really, really tough. They can drive you absolutely nuts. You know, I've had investors in the past that I handed them back their money, like literally. And I was just talking to an entrepreneur the other day, a year ago, just 1 year ago. Her business was struggling. Like it was on the verge of bankruptcy. It like, because COVID had just been hammering their business. It was kind of a business, a network business, a people to people business. It was just really, really tough. Her investors were hounding her. Like they were like, just, and you know, she just basically, even though she didn't have the money, she gave them back their money. Like she didn't have, and that just pushed her closer and closer and closer to the precipice of going under, because she couldn't take the stress of these investors, you know, going crazy on her. Like, you know, they had invested, but then they decided they didn't like the risk, right? Luckily, because she didn't give up, she borrowed money from other people, you know, anybody who would help her. And most people wouldn't, right? But she got enough money. She totally, based on one of the investors that stuck with her, one of them stuck with her, told her how to revamp her network into a commerce network.
Okay.
And totally change the economics of her business And she took that advice, executed on it, and a year later, raking in the money.
Excellent.
Literally, massive growth, massive. But the investors who she paid off, of course, don't get any of that benefit. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to dump investors. The other thing you have to do is pick your investors right. Like mm-hmm. you literally, you know, I told you I gave back money to one investor because that investor was driving me crazy. They were like constantly mm-hmm. badgering. They were threatening a lawsuit. I was like, life isn't worth it. Like, here's mm-hmm. your money back. A lot of times you're so happy to get capital from anybody that you let them ask all the questions and you don't ask the questions. You really mm-hmm. need to do your homework. You need to do diligence. Like they're doing diligence on you. You need to do diligence on them. What other startups that have they invested in? And not what other successful startups. What other startups have they invested in that fail? Talk to the entrepreneurs of those startups.
What do their founders think of investors, right?
Right, because it's easy to be nice when things are going well. But when things are failing, that's when an investor shows their true colors. Like, mm-hmm. are they going to support you? The great investors, when you're down, they're there for you. You know, they're mm-hmm. giving you advice. They're trying to help you turn that business. They're not blaming you. They're not demanding their money back. They're not threatening lawsuits. You need an investor like that. And it's up to you to figure it out. So mm-hmm. if you're taking on major investors, figure out which companies they funded in the past that didn't work and talk to those entrepreneurs.
So can you also talk a little bit about what do you expect from investors versus what do you expect from, let's say, advisors versus what do you expect from types like us, consultants, coaches, facilitators, external folks? How would you place like the best use of each category for a startup?
Well, I think the best use of each category is almost the same. So mm-hmm. I would say investors can give you money, but the most valuable investors are your advisors. Like they also mm-hmm. sit down with you, they coach you, they have a stake in your business, they're making introductions for you, they are doing things. So ask your investor what they're willing to do for you. Mm-hmm. Ask them what they're willing to do for you if things go wrong. You know, ask them the tough questions. Advisors, again, a lot of advisors turn into investors, right? Mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they get into your business. But really, you know, when seeking out investors, when seeking out consultants, find the smartest people you can. Find people you truly respect.
Finally, about Founderspace again, Steve. Why do founders pick Founderspace over all the other accelerators that are out there? What makes you guys different?
What makes us different? So me, no, Captain off. No, honestly, what makes us different? So one thing is we're very international. Mm-hmm. So a lot of incubators and accelerators are local, like they're mm-hmm. just Silicon Valley or whatever city you happen to be in, Detroit, you know, New York, doesn't matter, Shanghai, whatever city you're in, they're very locally focused, which is mm-hmm. fine. But our big differentiator is we have relationships globally. So mm-hmm. we are constantly matching and mixing and helping our entrepreneurs go global. So a lot of our entrepreneurs are honestly, they're from the US, but they're also from all over the world. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Silicon Valley is a melting pot of talent, right? And we are getting a lot of our best talent from crazy places like the country of Georgia or Uzbekistan, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, I have a bunch of partners. I gave a talk yesterday for our partners in Malaysia, you know, mm-hmm. all over the world. The talent is there. Like people are super smart everywhere in the world, but a lot of times the opportunity isn't there. The capital isn't there. So a lot of them want to come to Silicon Valley, enter the US market, and that's where we fit in, helping them onboard, launch in the Valley, access capital, and access our knowledge and our experience.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, very good. So, Steve, what do you need from listeners to this podcast? How can they help you? And where can they go for more information?
Well, I love great entrepreneurs.
Yes.
So if you have visionary ideas, if you have things you want to do, if you want to collaborate, talk, learn, we have lots of material, go to founderspace.com. Founderspace.com. You can also find me and a lot of our material, you know, on every social network, TikTok, Instagram, you know, LinkedIn, you name it. Search for Founderspace or search for Captain Hoff. And you'll also find all my books there. Like they're all there.
Excellent. Okay. Well, Steve, it has been a pleasure and an honor to have you on the Midstage Startup Momentum podcast. Really appreciate you taking the time to join here and come and explain all your experience to all the founders listening here.
Thank you, Roland. I loved it.
Absolutely. Well, and for the audience, next week we'll have another episode. So looking forward to that. Thank you, everyone.
Like what you heard? Subscribe to this podcast and leave a review. Tune in next time for more hot startups and interviews with some of the highest momentum startup founders in tech today.